In just a few minutes, we'll talk with Sioux Falls businesswoman, broadcasting pioneer, and city icon Sylvia Henkin. But first, SDPB Radio State House reporter Victoria Wicks is here with a legislative update from Peer. Vicki, hello.
Hi. Hi, Carl.
How are things in Peer?
I
can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can.
Okay.
Things are fine in
yep.
Peer.
And you're at the you attended the Joint Appropriation Committee this hearing this morning?
Well, I did. I the money that is going to be spent on the Criminal Justice Initiative is starting to be discussed, and it's kind of, you know, agency by agency. But as Jason Delgis from Bureau of Finance and Management explained, they're kind of like pieces of the puzzle. So there's a big picture, but the funding is being granted agency by agency. So different agencies were there to explain how much it would cost for them to put this criminal justice initiative into place. We had the UJS, for instance, Unified Judicial System, training judges and probation officers, for instance. And behavior health is going to be the largest chunk of it, because the idea behind this is to get to felons before they become inmates, and nonviolent felons, and particularly addicts, and treat them within the community. And that's going to take a lot of behavioral health.
Yeah, the governor announced his criminal justice reform last week, and now it seems like we're with the legislative committee hearings, we're learning how this will all come together, what pieces need to be put together to make it happen.
Right. Yeah. Some of the bills are the bills are scattered throughout all committees and wherever the actual functions that will change, but joint appropriations will hear all about the money part of it. And then this morning also.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you what you were just going to tell me about the meeting with Attorney General Marty Jackley.
Well, no, this morning I went to a Senate Judiciary meeting, and there are a couple of other things that happened. But the one thing of note there is that penalties are now increasing for detention officers who have sex with juveniles in juvenile detention. And to specify, South Dakota law says that anyone age 16 and older can make an informed choice on whether or not to have sex. It's, you know, it's legal age of consent. But juveniles in detention are there possibly up until the age of 18. So 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds are in detention. And up until now, it has been a Class 6 felony, punishable by 2 years for a prison guard, essentially a juvenile detention guard, to have sex with them. And the chair, Craig Teason, pointed out, kids in juvenile detention are particularly vulnerable. And then we hold law officers to a higher standard. So those two things came together. And Attorney General Marty Jackley is asking for a Class 4 felony for anyone who has sex with a minor in juvenile detention. And the Senate Judiciary recommended that do pass.
All right, Vicki, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday, and we'll talk with you again tomorrow.
Okay, thank you, Carl.
That's SDPB Radio State House reporter Victoria Wicks coming to us from Peer. She's providing legislative updates on Dakota Midday throughout this session. In late February, PBS airs a special 3-hour television documentary called Makers, Women Who Make America. The program explores women who've helped shape America over the past 50 years. And all this week on Dakota Midday, we're featuring women in South Dakota who have made a difference. Sylvia Henkin is a broadcasting pioneer, businesswoman, and volunteer who's been described as a Sioux Falls icon. She ran KSOO radio and television beginning in the 1970s. She founded the city's St. Patrick Day's Parade, and she's with me here in the studios at the University of Sioux Falls. And Sylvia, thanks so much for coming in to join us on Dakota Midday.
Well, excuse me. I'm glad you asked me, because I would have interrupted and say, here I am.
I use that term Sioux Falls icon. How do you feel about being described as an icon of Sioux Falls.
It's spooky. I'll never know when I go to the grocery store or go get my gas, car filled with gas, or I'm going to meet somebody and say, oh, Sylvia, you don't remember me, but way back and da-da-da-da-da-da. There are so many people that have remembered me, and after all, I'm no chicken anymore. I am 91 years old, and still most of my marbles are there. Once in a while, they get confused.
Well, is that just because you've remained active, you know, even after retirement? I mean, after retirement, you're still volunteering, you're still active in the community?
I think that sums it up, Carl. You know, people have long memories. In fact, I can hearken back to the 1960s, where I had a television show and KSOO radio, television became a radio station, a television station. Anyway, I had a Party Line show, which was an hour in the afternoon from 4 to 5, and it's amazing how many people throughout this part of the Midwest into Minnesota and Iowa and South Dakota will remember, I had some lady come and say, you don't remember this, Sylvia, but I was a junior in high school, and I was so scared to come on radio and television. But it was real fun. They remember that. I couldn't.
Well, what do you remember about your earliest days in radio? When did you get started in radio?
I stumbled in.
Stumbled in.
Yes. At that time, there was only KSOO AM, and we featured interviews, of course, as any radio station would. And one time, an announcer was supposed to interview a gentleman who was in town, and for some reason or other, he didn't show up, and so my husband grabbed me by the neck practically and said, you go visit with Barrett Lau. Now, he was a governor of one of the islands that was United States, and we got along famously, and from then on, I would pinch hit whenever there was someone that wasn't there to do some interviewing, but it got into quite a regular schedule when we put KSOO TV on the air in 1960, and we had this hour-long show called Party Line, and that ran for ages until, with the change of patterns and the scheduling, it finally ceased being in 1972. But from 1960 to 72, that was a well-watched or listened to both. It featured community events, such as you're doing right now.
And you're the host through the whole run?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, you get your husband's family.
That's right.
That was KSOO.
Right.
They started that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
Joe Hankin, the number one, started KSOO Radio in 1926. And it grew and grew and grew. And now I can brag that I have my son, Joe Hankin the second, who has a communication arts business here in Sioux Falls. So we've been in broadcasting for an awfully long time.
And no doubt you've seen a lot of changes.
Oh, yes. And I would say they were all for the good, because in olden days, everything was done manually, as I told you earlier, Carl. The logs, which were the Bible of a radio or a television station, you lived or died by the way you kept your logs. That was all done in pencil or pen until the computer came along. And we had a wonderful lady in our bookkeeping department who used to write them out very legibly. And she didn't trust the computers, so she still ran the schedules on the mechanical part of it, but she wrote it out in pencil right beside it, because she didn't trust them.
Yeah, and everything is computers. You know,
absolutely.
There's no tape or records anymore.
Thank goodness I'm out of it, because I am totally stupid when it comes to anything mechanical or electronical.
Do you miss it?
No.
No. Why not?
Well, I'm too busy doing other things that I think are probably more important than they really are. But Sioux Falls and this community has been so gracious and wonderful to our family, to me, to my late husband, and to my kids. It's just my way of paying my rent, if you want to call it that, or reciprocating. And any time they'll say to me, Sylvia, you know, you're retired. You're not doing anything. Would you help me? Blah, 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 blah. I said, oh, sure, I could do that. And then I have to look at my date book, and I find out I've got something else on that date. But it's a constant revolving my need to try to help. That's what it means, I think.
So you've never retired? Not a fish.
Yeah.
Maybe from the business world.
That's right. That's right. There's always a cause that comes along that I can feel passionately about, and keep my fingers in that and then pass it on to somebody else. And it's an ever-growing, wonderful feeling to feel that you can help.
Now, I'm interested in your role in running the radio and television stations after your husband's passing. Was that an easy transition to make?
Carl, I didn't realize how easy it was because, as I mentioned, I might have, I don't know, I had a full-ride scholarship to the Gregg School of Shorthand in Chicago. I was a shorthand whiz. And he didn't like to dictate. He didn't want a dictaphone. He didn't want any machine. He wanted to dictate to his secretary, which was Mary Paulton at the time, and then say, Mary, what did I say? So then they'd go back, and she would read to him what he said, and et cetera. Well, I took over that role because of my expertise in shorthand, and my husband didn't like to fly, so wherever we went by car and over the speed limit all the time. That was necessary to get where we were going. And he would start dictating to me, and a lot of this started when we had an application in for our TV station in 1959. We went on air in 1960. And he was a lawyer, and his specialty was in broadcasting law. And he knew the FCC rules backwards, forwards, and inside out. So we would be going to Washington or to Minneapolis or to Chicago, and I sitting in the shotgun seat in the front seat and with a shorthand pad on my lap, and he'd be going on and on and gone. He was a good talker, a good speaker. And I got it all down. Then when we got back to Sioux Falls, I would transcribe it for him. So by osmosis, I was learning by writing down the things that he was interested in and the FCC rules and regs and all that sort of thing. So without reading, without knowing it, I came in broadcasting with a far better knowledge of what goes on behind the scenes. And it was a very easy step for me.
Was it easy being a woman in broadcasting at that time and a woman who was running radio and television stations?
Well, I wasn't that active in the television because we, of course, had managers. But I did keep track of what was necessary. No, there were a few ladies in broadcasting. Ida McNeil from KGFX, I think it was, in Pier, head of station. And Helen Duhamel from Rapid City already was interested in the television station. She put that on in Rapid City. So I was, of course, one of the earlier ones there, too. But it's an easy step up in broadcasting to start at the bottom, maybe doing sales first, then getting into the writing and then the scheduling and all that sort of thing. It was a very easy step for me.
How about being a woman in general as a businesswoman in the 1970s? Were there certain challenges or just...
Oh, yes. I was also on a couple of bank boards at the time. And, in fact, I was one of the first ladies on a bank board here in Sioux Falls. And I was sort of frowned upon by the gentleman who had the rules and regulations And Nils Turnquist of the bank asked me if I would join that bank board. And I said, oh, well, I don't know anything about banking, for heaven's sakes. He says, that's not what I'm looking for. That's why we have the professional bankers there. We want someone who knows the community. So that's where I fell into some of these interesting boards of directors and things that I found myself in.
These days, do you... younger women come to you for advice, whether it's in broadcasting or whether banking or just working in the community?
Absolutely, and I love to try to visit with everyone who would like to find out anything. But there was a special award that the YWCA established in my honor, if you want to call it that, and that is in mentoring. And without a doubt, days go by where there's nothing doing, but then again, I get a rash of calls from friends of mine, or someone said, call Sylvia Henkin or something like that. And usually I can come up with some kind of a half-educated guess on what they want to know and how I can help them. But I've done a lot of that.
How important is the work that you've done in volunteering, civic leadership in Sioux Falls, that there are people who are willing to do this?
Well, if you take a look around, I think you'll find that anything of any proportion gets done because there's action. And I don't believe but I have to believe in a cause. And one of the ones that is dearest to my heart is for the handicapped, whether it be physical or mental or whatever. I have a handicapped lady, my daughter, who is 64 or 5, I can't even remember. And my life has been taken up in trying to help that portion of our civilization. And it's rewarding, and there are sources that you can direct people to if they want to know how to do this or that. And I find I'm being called on many, many times to help out in a situation such as that. And, of course, I've spent time on the governor's committees for the disabled, the disability, and all that sort of thing. And that just sort of grew out of having a passion because it's in my family.
You'll still have a passion for the arts?
For the arts also. My husband was a fantastic musician, and I appreciate and know music. We've been active on the symphony board for years. Between music and people, I think that covers my gamut.
Music and people.
Music and people.
Well, that's not a bad way to dedicate your life, or bad
no
things
way.
To dedicate
no,
your life
the
to?
Rewards, Carl, the rewards that come back to you from having helped someone. I shouldn't mention this because I don't have her permission, but a person very active in our education system in Sioux Falls got a hold of me years ago, and she said, Sylvia, I want you to know how influential you were when I was in high school. And I said, oh, I don't remember. And she said, yes, I had a chance to be on Party Line with you, and you made me feel so comfortable and so easy to talk with, and to it sort of guided me into my career now. And she's very, very well loved and liked in education.
You've spent so much of your life in Sioux Falls. What do you like about this community?
The people. Mm-hmm. The people who get things done. You ask anybody, and we are the envy of the whole state, as you know. We're driving the locomotive that they say is influential throughout the state. There are so many people who have dedicated their lives, their ambitions, and everything to a cause, or to raising up some of the old myths and opening the door and letting it out. There's so much more education and so much knowledge. It is, of course, the computer has been wonderful too, but there are many, many areas where the human touch, the human voice, can get more done than any typewriter or any computer. And that's what I give to some of these things, a human voice, and I'm not afraid to express my feelings about something, and they can take it or leave it.
Now, I understand that for people who want to know more than what we're able to talk about right now, your book, Sylvia, Life in Three Acts,
mm-hmm.
and that's been out a couple of years?
Oh, yes, I think about 3 years now, and there are several books, I think, in the library. And I told you earlier, Carl, if you'd open up that book, you didn't need to talk to me. You could just read a few things, and you'd know all about me.
Well, people want to hear your voice, though.
Oh, sure.
It would
thank
be the same
you.
Me reading it. Well, Sylvia, thanks so much for coming by Dakota Midday.
Thank you so much.